I'm Christy. I'm an addict.
Hi, Christy.
Can we reopen this meeting with the Serenity Prayer, please? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. It's been a while since I've done this. I'm like super nervous, so I'll probably jump around. I'm going to try to stay on track. So I'll just, you know, share the beginning of my story. I was born in 1975, and, you know, I was born to my parents. They're like lunatics. I don't really want to go really too much into their story, but they are, you know, a lot of the reasons, you know, why I became the person that I used to be. And so, like, just to keep that part of my story brief, so my mom and dad met on, like, a blind date. My mother just lost her son previous to this. So he would be my brother if he were still alive today, and he was 4 years old, and he drowned. And so, you know, shortly after that, you know, while my mother was going through grieving, she met my father, and it was kind of like a date, like a one-night stand, and she got pregnant with me. So, you know, my dad finds out that, you know, my mother's pregnant and, like, she's in the hospital giving birth. And he's like, what do you mean? So he goes, you know, to the hospital. And I, you know, I had a different last name. And he made sure that, you know, that because he's his ego, you know. And so, you know, he made sure I was his daughter. And then he married my mother 2 weeks after I was born. So I was born on October 17th. My mom and dad got married on Halloween. And the funny part, so my whole story is all about October. My clean date is October 28th. And it's just so weird like that. Anyhow, so there was a lot of violence around me when I was growing up. My father grew up very, very poor. He had a dirt floor. They didn't have running water. You know, they had rats and stuff. My grandfather was a mushroom farmer, and this was back when they had plow horses, and he was kicked by a plow horse and lost his leg. So, and my grandmother didn't work, and there were six of them, so I think, or maybe five. I don't know my family that well, so anyhow, there's a bunch of kids for no income. So what they did was they scratched, they stole, they did whatever they could to get by, and so my father learned to be a mechanic with the scraps, and he started to fix cars in the back alley, and eventually, I don't know what he did to get the money, but, you know, he worked for this guy who had an auto parts store. This guy left it to my dad for so much money that he had, and then he built this multi-million dollar business. So with that, there was a lot, and this is like the early 80s. Everybody had money. Everybody worked. Cocaine was huge. And the area that my father had his business, there was a lot of mafia stuff that went around on then. And so he started doing stuff with, you know, money. So just to, like, make a long story short, there was abuse. There was a lot of violence. Like, I mean, there was major crime activity. And there was my sister and I. My sister was born less than a year after I was. So my mother had me and my sister. My father was always at work building this business. When he would come home, you know, they would be partying. And there he would beat my mother in front of my sister and I. And so what my mom did was she bought horses. Because my dad now at this point had money. So she had horses and she would always go, you know, ride and whatever. And leave my sister and I with, like, this woman. And this woman had kids and they abused us. And there was a lot of drug activity there. And this was like the ghetto. And this was like, it was, now it's like major ghetto. There's somebody gets shot and killed there every day. But it's McKee's Rocks. I don't know if anybody's familiar with McKee's Rocks. And then my dad's business is now in the Hill District. So so I really didn't have, like, my parents around growing up. But when they were around, like, I clung to my mother. Like, and I was always on her leg. Like, I was that kid. And I was always so fearful of, like, everybody. Like, I didn't talk to people. I didn't socialize at all with other children. But I was willing to fight. Like, I was always ready to fight somebody. Like, I was this big, and I remember, like, men talking to my mother, and I was like, I'll beat their ass. You know, and, like, I don't even know to this day, like, what the heck, you know, where that came from, except for the only, you know, I can only think that it's because that was my environment, was violence. So I did. I started fighting young. I went to a Catholic school, and, like, I was not a good kid. You know, I had really, really good grades, but, like, I put my hands on other kids. And, you know, so, like, this woman that babysat us, that we basically lived at her house on the weekends, you know, during the week we went to school, and then in the summers, like, we were always at her house. So, like, I decided I didn't like her, and I just, like, flipped out. And so my mom's like, okay, well, she doesn't have to watch you guys anymore. So, like, I think I was about 8 years old at this time. So then my parents started to leave us home alone. So it was me and my sister, and, like, my parents had guns. So, like, they would just be like, okay, if somebody comes to the door, just shoot them. That's so crazy. And I was 8 years old, and I was all about it. I was like, sweet, like, I'm going to shoot somebody. It's so crazy to talk about that with all the crap that's going on in the news and stuff today. But that was my life. So anyhow, like, I wanted to spend more time with my mother, and I really had, like, this thing with animals. So, like, my way to find peace as a kid was, like, I always just, like, I hung out by myself. I would, like, play in the woods, and I had this thing with animals. Like, I don't know, like, wild animals just, like, would approach me and stuff. So, like, I was really into animals my whole life. And so I wanted a horse. Like, I wanted to hang out with my mom. So my sister and I had horses growing up, and I was on the show circuit and all that stuff. I did really well. But I was still so detached from people, you know? And, like, I think I did really well because, like, that was my thing. Like, animals were my thing. Like, I didn't connect with the other girls. I hated girls. I still struggle with the whole woman, making friends with women thing. I really struggle with that area of my life. I still struggle with making friends. I have 8.5 years clean, and I still struggle with making friends with women in recovery. I just do. So, long story short, so my father got in a lot of trouble, and we lost everything. So, like, everything I had that kind of, like, from my animals, I think that's where I developed, like, the necessary unconditional love that we're supposed to have when we're growing up, you know? So I think I got that from, like, my animals. So that kind of saved me somewhat. But now, like, I was about between 14 and 16 years old, and that was just, like, all taken from us. Like, we had a beautiful house. We had a pool. We had tennis courts. We had everything. Everything. So that was just, like, all taken from us. Meanwhile, while we had all this, I was, like, going to get the ghetto to play. Like, I was stealing cars. I mean, like, I was having a blast. And then shortly after that, like, I started to get high. And then our stuff was taken, and I stopped going to school. And the drugs just got harder. You know, I just started using harder drugs. And I had fun. I mean, I did. And that's why I did it. And it was, you know, it was fabulous, so I thought. And, like, I thought that was, like, the glamorous life. And my dad's friends used to tell me when I was young, like, don't worry about getting a job yet. Like, take your time, party. And, like, it's so funny because I remember the day, like, his friend telling me that. And I took that to heart, and I took that suggestion and ran with it. Like, I partied my butt off, like I think a lot of us did. I lived everywhere. You know, I moved around. I graduated high school by the skin of my teeth, and, like, I ran away to Florida. My parents got a divorce, and I ran away because they were driving me bananas, and I needed to get away from them. And I started getting into, like, hallucinogenics while I was down there, and, like, lost my mind. Totally lost, because I was doing it all the time. Like, you're not supposed to, like, trip out on, like, LSD or whatever the heck it was every day. Like, you're just not. But, I mean, like, I'd go to work, and I worked in, like, I worked on the beach. It was great. Like, I worked on the beach, and I'd be, like, still tripping. Like, so crazy. And my mother came down, and because my sister got pregnant with her first son, and she was 19, and I was in Florida, and my mom came down and said, you got to come home. Like, we need you. So I came home, and I was so detached. Like, and I already have, like, a dissociative personality problem, like, that goes along with all my other mental health stuff. So, like, it just started to get really bad, and I just started to realize, like, all the real uglies of the world, because, like, I was on my own. I didn't have any of these crutches. Like, my parents weren't giving me handouts. Like, I was just like, wow, like, this is reality, and it's ugly, you know? And it was ugly because, like, I wasn't doing anything positive for myself. I was using. So I had my first hospitalization. And they diagnosed me schizophrenic. Well, I was at the time. I mean, I was taking so much acid. I was hearing so many voices and seeing so many things. Like, off of it. It took me 7 years for that to stop happening. Like, after the drug was gone out of my 7 years. Now, obviously, I started using drugs again, so I'm sure that contributed to it. So my drug use got worse. You know, I got out of the hospital, and it did, and it got bad. It got so bad. So I had a girl, she was my best friend to this day. Like, somebody walked into the meeting and she looked like her, and I was like, wow, I miss her. And she died from this disease. And after that, like, I just kind of lost my mind, and I started doing, you know, the really hard stuff and, you know, using needles and all that other stuff. It was really bad. And I'm like, this is good that I'm up here sharing this, because, like, I'm so removed from it today. Like, my only way to connect with my past is to come here and tell you guys, like, yeah, like, I smoked crack and I shot heroin and I tried to shoot whatever I could put in the flipping needle, because I was like, oh, maybe I can put this in there. And, you know, and I did that. And, like, what the biggest part of that is like, I lost the will to live completely. Like, I didn't care. I was hoping that I wouldn't wake up. And every time I would wake up, I'd be like, damn it. You know what I mean? Like, I'm here still. And I have to do this again. And, like, I had a running partner, but I always used it at my house. Like, I didn't go to other people's homes. Like, my disease had me isolating from birth. So, I mean, I found a way to use and get more right from my home. I don't have jail as a part of my story. By the grace of God, but I should be in jail. I did things, obviously, that we all do, but I should have been convicted for an attempted homicide, and I don't even have it on my record. I almost killed somebody. He was life-flighted. If he would have died, I'd definitely be in jail still, but I mean, as a result of this disease, you know, I stabbed him in the back with a butcher knife. Like, I just, because of me seeing all the abuse that my father put my mother through, I always told myself ever since I was little, if a man ever hits me, I'm going to kill him. Like, I'm going to kill him. So I programmed myself for that day. When that man put his hands on me, I went to the kitchen, grabbed the knife, put it right in his back. Not even thinking about it. After I did it, I was like, oh my God, what did I do? I, like, pulled it out. And I was like, I'm so sorry. He's like, Christy, I think I need to go to the hospital. Like, that's how powerful our minds are. Like, that is this disease. Like, we, and like, I mean, honestly, I'm like the nicest person. I struggle to kill a spider. I'm like, ugh, I'm going to take it to life. Like, I don't want to do that, you know? I mean, I eat meat and I love meat, but, like, I just don't want to be the one. And I actually want to hunt. But, like, it's just, like, for no reason I have to kill this spider. And I'm like, well, it's him or me. you know, like, he's going to get me while I'm sleeping, so I'm going to do it. But, like, honestly, that's who I am. So, like, just to, like, stick a knife in some guy's back is just, like, not my norm. You know what I mean? It's like I'm not running around thinking, plotting murders. And, like, I have that. It's not on my record. And it's the hugest blessing because, you know, like, I wouldn't be able to do anything with my life if that were there that I do today. So, long story short is, like, things got really ugly and bad for me, where I was, like, in one mental hospital after the other. They didn't know what was wrong with me. They were labeling me, like, everything under the sun. They were giving me all kind of different medications that just had all these side effects and made me feel awful. So, like, I mean, they would give me, like, something to sedate me so I'd do cocaine because I was, like, that's just, like, putting me to sleep. So, like, nothing I did on my own helped. So eventually, the end of all this crap, I'm dating this guy for a few years. I don't know the timeline because it's a blur. But for a few years, him and I were together. He doesn't even know how long. He's in recovery too. So we're together and we're using, and like crap got really, 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 really bad. Because he was like cheating on me left and right, and I was like kind of gullible, where I was like, people do that for drugs? Like, I had no idea. And then, like, I started to find out, and I was like, so I was, like, crying and dying on the inside because I thought I loved this guy, and I thought these people were my friends, and, like, they were stealing off me, and it was insane. So, like, that was my bitter end because I was crushed on the inside, and I kept using to, like, try to, like, fix it, but, like, I would be, like, getting high and crying. Like, it wasn't working for me anymore. So, like, I flipped out on him, and I told him he needs to go to rehab, and, like, he was so scared of me. He was like, okay, you know, and he, like, just jumped on a bus, and he ended up going to rehab, and he was clean, I think, like, 10 years. He just recently relapsed, but anyhow, long story short is, like, I eventually ended up getting to a narcotics meeting, anonymous meeting, because, like, I was still using, he was clean going to meetings, and I thought, you know, where's he always going? And I thought I was going to get myself clean. And I went out one morning early. It was, who knows what time it was, 6, 7, whatever, like we do. And, you know, I used to put my hoodie on. And I thought nobody could see me because I couldn't see them. And I'm like, I go out and I cop. And I see this bus. And I'm like, oh, it's going to that place he always goes to. So I jump on the bus with my paraphernalia and my drug clothes, no shower. And I show up at my first NA meeting to stalk my, at the time, boyfriend. So I walk in there, and people are like, hug me, like, get off me. And he's like, babe. I'm like, what do you mean, babe? What are you doing? So that's how I made it into my first meeting. So I sit down, and there's a speaker, and I sit in the front, and he's like, sit here. And everybody knew me because of him, and this is like, it was his home group at the time, and everybody knows my story, and they know me because that's all he did was share about his crazy girlfriend that was still out running amok. And so I go, and everybody's like super nice. So I didn't get it at that time. But like 2 years later after that was when I finally did get clean. But that's how I got into Narcotics Anonymous, and it was a miracle. And it, like, my story is, like, I've always believed in a higher power because, like, that's what I had. You know, it's like I went to a Catholic school. I didn't believe in that. I was like, these people are all crazy. I didn't like any of them. But, like, I would pray, and, like, it would help when I was a kid. Like, I wouldn't be able to sleep. I had nightmares all the time. And, like, I would pray, and I'd fall asleep. So I believed something always listened. So I get into Narcotics Anonymous, and so that God concept thing for me wasn't that – it wasn't hard for me to pray. So I came in and I got a sponsor. And this is interesting. Nobody wanted to sponsor me. Like, every woman I asked to sponsor me said, no, I'm doing my 12 and 12, or no, this, that. And, like, I'm from Pittsburgh, and the area is freaking huge. Like, there's four meetings a day. I used to go to 4 meetings a day. So in my 90 and 90, I did 4 meetings a day because I had no other life. And it was great for me. It kept me clean. So I asked this man to sponsor me. And I know we're not supposed to do that. So he was my sponsor. He has, like, 30 years clean. Freaking amazing. Speaks all over the world. And I was like, he's so tall. And, like, jet black and, like, scary to me. And I'm like, will you sponsor me? He's like, well, yes, Christy. I will sponsor you and we'll see how it goes. And I was like, just until I can find somebody else to sponsor me. So God had his reasons. Like, here's the thing. Like, I didn't have a father figure. So that's what this man did for me. We did not meet in any places like our home. We met in public places. We worked steps. So I worked steps with this person. And they taught me how to be a lady. Because, like, literally, I was, like, I sat like a man. And, like, I just had no idea that, like, you know, if my part of my boob was hanging out, that men were thinking, oh, I, you know, want to touch her boob. And I was like, really? He's like, yeah. I was like, oh, because I was so high all the time, I had no clue what I was ever doing. So he taught me to be somewhat of a lady. I'm still working on it. So he was great, and I thank him for that. So that was how my foundation began. And I reached out, and I got numbers, and I called women, and I eventually got a woman sponsor. And I worked steps again with her, and we did a little tradition work. And she relapsed. And so since then, I struggled finding a new sponsor. So at this point, I had like almost 4 years clean. I broke up with that guy. He was sleeping. Oh, here's another part of my story. So when the reason all these women didn't want to sponsor me, they were all sleeping with my boyfriend. So I was coming to NA meetings and sitting there next to people who were sleeping with my boyfriend. My sponsor was sleeping with him. Everybody was sleeping with him. But, you know, whatever. I got through it and I stayed clean. Like, that's the important part of it. It was pain clean, like I've never felt before in my entire life. Because we were engaged. And I thought I was going to marry this guy. And, you know, like, and my sponsor I had, you know, after the one that he was sleeping with, taught me, like, you know what? Like, apply your steps in that area. Apply your steps in that area. And I'm like, okay, I'm powerless. Hit my knees, turn it over, do something different. You know, the first three steps got me through that. Man, it was tough. I mean, fetal position, on the ground, praying all the time, going to meetings, feeling like total dirty garbage, sitting in, like, Eaton Parks with other people in recovery, like, not even hearing what they're saying because I was just so drained and depressed. But I stayed clean because all I did was what everybody told me to do. Like, my will tells me to do all these things. I have great ideas all the time. I still have great ideas. And then when I tell people, they're like, that's not a good idea. But, like, I learned that I cannot listen to my own, like, in between my ears, all those thoughts, they're wrong. They're usually lies. Like, they're setting me up to take the next one. So, like, all I did was, I was like a robot. Like, they would tell me to do something, and I would just do it, regardless of how I felt. So I got through that and I stayed clean. I dated another guy shortly after, you know, I got over that, and he was killed by the police in, San Diego. He, you know, him and his sister and I became like kind of friends, and he relapsed, and I told her, I said, I think he would do better out there because he was like stealing cocaine from his mother and that's where he was living. So he went out and lived in San Diego with her, his sister, and she kicked him out because he was using, and it was suicide by cop. He pointed at the police like this, and they shot and killed him. So that was devastating. I stayed clean through that. Shortly after that, I met my husband. But in between all of that, like, I made tons of friends in the program. A lot of them relapsed. Some of them are dead. I sponsored women. All of them relapsed, I think. Currently, I am not sponsoring anybody, and I just got the sponsor I have. I picked her up 2 years ago, so, I mean, the journey's been, like, since I've completely surrendered my will, and I stopped, like, you know, attention-seeking for, like, from a man and all of that stuff, since I totally surrendered, I met my husband, and that was just, like, it was crazy how we met. Like, I didn't like, I had a psychology class with him and I hated him. And, you know, we eventually became friends. And I was getting ready to go to New York City on this date and I had to get a gown. And last minute, I was like, shit, I don't have anybody to come with me to get this dress. And I was next to store to my now husband's house. And I said, please come with me. I just need help, like, you know, zipping it and stuff like that. So he came with me, and here we are, you know, 6 years later, married. But, or not six, 4 years. I don't know how long we've been. No. Wait. I've been married 2 years in October. Met him 6 years ago in school. Anyhow, I'm happy. Like, my life is good. You know, like, my happy place was, you know, when I had my horses and, like, in playing in the woods and stuff like that. And my husband's from home, so he's from out this way. And, you know, so, like, our goal was, like, let's buy a house out there. So this is the beautiful part of my story. So I said, okay, so we had nothing. When I met my husband, he was jobless. He was dating an older woman, and she was like his sugar mama. And I took him from her, and I was like, listen, you're smart, you're going to get a job. So, like, he got a job, and he worked, and, you know, we both worked our butts off, and we made ends meet. And I was like, let's start praying for what we want. And, you know, we'll give all the glory to God when he blesses us. So we started praying, and my husband, you know, started to get blessed. And, like, God put it on my heart, Christy, I don't want you to work anymore. Because I started to have a lot of physical pain. I was cleaning, like, I don't know, I was cleaning like 6 to 7 days a week, two houses almost a day. And I was making a lot of money, but I was blowing it. Like, I have nothing to show from them. Like, I was just buying shoes and clothes and jewelry and, I mean, just like what we do around here, you know? And, like, God put it on my heart to quit my jobs. And I was like, that's crazy, you know? And I was like, is this real, you know? And, like, the way I have my relationship with God, like, how I developed it in this room is, like, I have my way of communicating. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to step out on this limb. And I did. And my husband got a job with Uber in the engineering department 2 days later, me quitting the job. He has no college education. He's just a freaking nerd that likes computers. And, like, he got a job in the engineering department. It's amazing. So that's the first thing that happened. And I'm like, oh, my God, this is really working. God is blessing us, right? Like, what I do every day is I stay clean. I try to live the best way I can according to this, how this program taught me on spiritual principles. I don't ever pick up anything. I pick up my phone. I call my sponsor. I pick up my phone and I call somebody else in the program. I go to a meeting. Like, I pick up a basic text. Like, I pick up something other than the drug, something recovery related, something that somebody told me around here. And because of that, like, everything is falling together. Yeah, it took a long time for me, I think. You know, it was like 40 years of hell in my life. But, like, God's will is being done. Like, that's what I pray for. I say, God, if it is your will, I want a house where I can have my horse. God, if it is your will, we need a truck. My husband had a Mini Cooper, and we moved over by Smicksburg. All my neighbors are Amish. We moved over there. We had a Mini Cooper. Like, no, that's not, we're not getting around in a Mini Cooper. Listen, I was like, God, we need a truck. My husband, the next day, a deer hit his car, and we got the money to get a truck. I'm telling you, man, like, I was like, are you, my husband would get up for work in the morning, like, 3 a.m., leave the house, he comes home, I think, what are you doing home? It's like 5 a.m., he's like, I'm working from home, my car just got totaled by a deer, and he goes downstairs and works. I'm like, what did he say? And I go down, and it, like, takes a couple days for the insurance thing to go through. He's like, I don't think we're going to get anything for it, I think I'm going to end up out, and I'm like, nah, we're getting a truck. I was like, we're getting a truck. I knew it. So we got our truck. And I'm like, okay, God, I want a horse. Listen, I keep doing as well and doing as well. And, like, I call a couple places, and I'm like, I need to do some kind of work. I can't just be sitting around. This horse stables called me 2 miles up the street from me. They rescue horses, and they train them. And they're like, we want you to come work for us. So I go up there and I start working for them, and they have this horse, and me and her just, like, bond. Like, she's not even trained. She was rescued with a baby. She's only 4 years old. They're just putting her under saddle. But, like, that's my horse, you know? Like, they're like, Christy, we'll do you a favor, because I don't have the money for a horse. They're like, we'll let you lease her on a 1-year contract, and she'll be yours in 1 year. You know what I mean? Wait, it gets better. So I'm like, before all this, I'm like, babe, we need a house. We have no money still to this day in savings account. It's all owed, but we're paying it, and we're never late on a bill. I said, babe, we need a house. I start looking into, like, all these different programs, the USDA will give you a freaking house. You're just going to pay the mortgage. You don't have to have money down. We got a house. Dude, we got a house. Like, listen, I'm a junkie who was, like, in the ghetto telling people I'm going to kill them because they're looking out, like, I'm looking out my window and I think they're all looking at me. And I'm, like, running out there with my, like, I'll kill you. Stop, watch me get high. And, like, I'm getting my sanity back because of these steps, because of this program. I'm married. I'm happy. Like, I never thought I'd be happy. I wanted to die every day. You know, I want to live today. I do, you know. And it's just, like, all because of this program. Like, God brought me here. He wants me to give the message of hope. And, like, I think my story is pretty hopeful. I mean, my dreams are coming true. Like, they say lost dreams awaken. I never thought in a million years, you guys, never, ever did I think that my life would be what it is today. I mean, yes, I have really shitty days. I do. I'm crazy as they come. You know, like, I'm borderline personality disorder. I'm, like, I'll cry over nothing for 1 second, and the next minute I'm elated with joy. Like, my poor husband, he does so well dealing with me. But, like, all in all, like, I'm happy. Like, every time I get all pissy and my little shitty attitude, I look at my life and I'm like, damn, my life is good. Like, it's so good. And, like, I don't have a mansion. I'm not driving a Benz. Like, but I don't want that. I don't want it. Like, I don't. Today's the first time I wore makeup in probably, like, a year. Like, I don't wear makeup. I wear, like, shitty clothes all the time. And I was like, all right, I got to get dressed up. And it's the hardest thing for me to get dressed up because it's not comfortable. You know, I like to just be, I like to smell like horse poop, and I like to play with my dogs and my cats, and, like, that's what, I like to shoot my guns in my backyard. That's the other thing I like about living out here. You can't do that in the city. You'll hit someone, you know. So, like, I love my life today. Like, my dreams are coming true. I grew up, you know, close to the city, but in my heart, like, this is what I've always known that I wanted. And, like, there's a book I read, and it says, like, God will, he wants to fill all your heart's desires, and that's so true. And, like, that's one of my prayers, you know. I'm like, God, if it is in your will, you know my heart, fill my desires. You said you want to do it. Do it. Let's do this. Because I'll go out and bless people as you bless me. And I hope I blessed everybody here today. If not, at least one. That's all I have. Thanks.